Getting back from summer break and listening on the radio and watching on the television and reading the paper and all of the disasters, it makes me want to call this Sunday Reeling Day rather than Rally Day. And in the midst of all of these disasters, my plan today still remains firm because it's... These kids, really, they're so far ahead of us as far as technology is concerned, not necessarily with all of the baby boomer generation, but I'm certainly in that, and with the iPhones and the Apples and the YouTube and the tablets, and I'm not talking about ibuprofen, my personal respite always remains the office, where I can type out a letter to a friend, and I love the clicking of the typewriter, that ancient IBM Selectric, which is an advancement that amazed me and still amazes me to this day. And sitting there in the office, ruminating over the technology available for our 1 and our 3-year-old grandsons, I began to wonder why, with the day-by-day inventions, all of the achievements in communication and networking, why are we dumber? In America, literacy has been declining every year. Since 1952, television, to pick an easy target, has been blamed for everything from failure to read to broken marriages, and now computers, cell phones, and the internet are being blamed for the same thing. But television and computers are a mirror reflection of the larger culture, and there is the problem. Eric Donald Hirsch wrote 2 books, Cultural Literacy, and his follow-up reference book, The Dictionary of Cultural Literacy, and his most recent book, which was published last year, Why Knowledge Matters, Rescuing Our Children from Failed Educational Theories. Hirsch, he says that since 1965, our national literacy has been declining. As a nation, we're dumbing down. This decline has occurred at a time when functional literacy is becoming even more important to our economic well-being. In his book, Hirsch explains, we know from the history of Europe that national schools can achieve high literacy for everyone in a multicultural population. France did so with a population that up to the 18th century spoke at least 4 different languages. The French school system turned illiterate peasants into Frenchmen, and it was the school system, not the peasant home, that accomplished this miracle. Viewed in a long historical perspective, it has been the school, not the home, that has been the decisive factor in achieving mass literacy. The chief makers of the modern nation have been the school teachers. Hirsch says that the need is for us to conserve our literary traditions instead of continually updating materials to be either skills-oriented or relevant. We make the mistake of disposing with traditional history, myth, and literature, as well as the basic skills of reading, writing, arithmetic, and oral communication. He says, such cultural conservatism is fortunate and useful for the purposes of national communication. It enables grandparents to communicate with grandchildren, Southerners with Midwesterners, whites with blacks, Asians with Hispanics, and Republicans with Democrats, no matter where they were educated. If each local system imparts the traditional reference points of literate culture, then everybody is able to communicate with strangers, and that is a good definition of literacy, the ability to communicate with strangers. While religions differ in terms of origins, interpretation of holy books, and culture, we like to think that our own religion is truly blessed by God, marked by deep thought, high quality, and humane standards of behavior. Whether Jewish or Christian or Muslim or Buddhist or Hindu, as well as the ancient Roman and Greek religions, the texts must be true for each group, validating the particular religious tribe. And the same can be claimed for any culture. A healthy culture demands a shared body of knowledge with texts and symbols linking each society. So why in America are literacy rates collapsing? Hearst says that by any judgment, and not just in the movies and on television, the culture is mired, he's pretty strong here, in a veritable swamp of ignorance. For example, in my doctor's office, I had a little doctor's appointment this past Friday. They always have those great magazines as reading material as you're waiting for your physical, which helps along the way. And here's a little interesting thing I read. Imagine a culture where an entire high school class agrees that Julius Caesar invented pizza. Where success is measured by wealth, breast size, or whether you have any chance at marrying Justin Bieber or Taylor Swift. Where 90% of the people favor a war in a place where 75% cannot locate on a map. Where a 2,000-year-old book is an authority on physics, biology, and astronomy. Where the average teacher earns how much? $35,000, $40,000 a year, and a rock musician, $500,000 a night. Where more money is spent on football and basketball than on sex and drug education. Where books like Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, and Catcher in the Rye are censored in the schools. Where certain elected officials violate every canon of ethics, fair play, and good manners. Where a person is strapped into a chair, blindfolded, and publicly gassed to death. While in Canada, Catherine and I, we were present at the Festival Theatre when the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau appeared. He finally appeared. We were waiting for Trudeau. That's a joke. He appeared to present a check for the rebuilding of the Tom Patterson Theatre. He didn't have it with him, but he said, well, we're going to try to find the money. We were standing next to what seemed to be a security guy, though I couldn't see a weapon. I did see an earpiece. You know the earpiece? We had a nice conversation anyway. Well, it's quite different for us when even our Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, is surrounded by a large security contingent due to the danger of assassination. It is different in our country. And this reminded me of another visit to Stratford, Catherine and I enjoyed years ago when a Canadian protester somehow evaded security officials and planted a whipped cream pie on the face of Canada's Prime Minister, Jean Chrétien, if I said that correctly. Now, that's creative. Pies. That is creative. Remember that some Sunday when you don't like one of my sermons. The dream of America's founding fathers and mothers, it was creative. It was literate and informed. An ideal proposed for the average citizen was an ability to have a conversation about art and science, religion, and philosophy. Our founders desired a culture in their time and in the future where ordinary people could freely study, analyze, associate, understand, and communicate. All of these centuries of knowledge. And I think the problem is that we're stuck on popular culture rather than on cultural literacy. As Hirsch describes it, cultural literacy is the enlightenment and refinement of taste acquired by intellectual and aesthetic training, while popular culture is that which is loved and approved by large numbers of people, the mob. And I suspect popular culture is not good for people, since much of religion and art and politics teach us that while what is unpopular may not be what we want, well, it is certainly what we need. Consider the roots. Consider the roots of our religious faith, where the Hebrew prophets were despised. They were rejected. And Christian disciples, they were stoned and crucified. And Protestant reformers were jailed and burned for their faith and their knowledge and their actions. Consider the arts, where so often the popular is indeed pop, while the unpopular prevails. T.H. Lawrence was censored in America. Vincent van Gogh was unable to sell a single painting. Igor Stravinsky, he was laughed off the concert stage. And consider politics. George Washington was attacked as a traitor, and Thomas Jefferson assailed as an atheist, and Abraham Lincoln portrayed as an ape. That is why when some folks suggest we change our worship to match with popular culture, I get rebellious. I do. There are plenty of worship centers around Cadillac and around the country that do the trendy thing, and I hope we're not one of them. I know I'm wearing a robe this morning, okay? As they did 100 years ago, 200 years ago. And besides, it's for my grandmother. If we are to achieve a noble culture, besides a continual pursuit for wisdom, for insight, we should, for our children, for future generations, keep the gates open for the unique, eccentric, and currently unpopular. A good culture is not based on mass opinion. It's based on the creativity of individuals. And today I thank God for this congregation filled with such a variety of creative individual, knowledgeable, well-read, a community of open minds and kind hearts on a journey, never reaching that destination. I recall working at Continental Can Company in Milwaukee. It was in 1973, that summer, with a number of interesting people, factory workers. And there was one man, he was in his mid-50s. He was a tin blocker. He taught me how to do tin blocking. He had read the works of Plato and Socrates, Shakespeare and Marlowe, Luther and Calvin, Melville and Bronte. And I had in my possession at the time a paperback book by William Faulkner, The Sound and the Fury. And he had read it and then gave me his interpretation, and he said, "Hey, you ought to read As I Lay Dying, another one, and Intruder in the Dust. There's a great one for those who are religious, Absalom, Absalom." Now that summer is over, and we make our transitions back to the job and to the schools, to volunteering and to church, we should enter that greater culture of depth and insight and studying and daring creativity. So let's participate in a culture that expands taste and broadens intellect, and challenges the human spirit, a culture that embraces the painful, the discomforting, and the unpopular. Let us not ride on the tide of cultural frivolity, but look for ultimate significance instead. And so after Sunday dinner, when you go home, your televisions will give you the opportunity to watch, Sunday football, I suppose, or a movie, or some religious preacher that may or may not do a better job than John Dowd. Tell me about it next week, though. I won't be here. Instead, being congregationalists, why not sit down with a classical book or listen to an inspiring symphony or make use of your creative energies, whether painting a canvas or fixing an automobile or possibly just taking a kayak trip around Lake Mitchell or Lake Cadillac. As for me, I'll sit down with several books I anticipate to read for sermons in the coming year, one of which includes a piece of poetry by Ralph Waldo Emerson. And it goes like this. I am the owner of the sphere of the seven stars and the solar year, of Caesar's hand and Plato's brain, of Lord Christ's heart and Shakespeare's strain. Amen.